So we bought the house, 2014, moved in, and then we found out we have six neighbors, six families within walking distance as we go around the block that lived here. Today, almost 10 years later, there are 12 Bengali families and more moving in. And we found out more just to, if we extend our walk, say about a half a mile, then there's more Bengalis down the street here, down the street there. And in the whole area now, we've discovered actually about 10,000 people in these two cities. We're the only ones working with them in their language. There are others who want to work with them that don't know the language, so that it's much harder for them.
For 2,000 years, Christ has been extending his kingdom through ordinary, faithful people. Their blood, sweat, and tears are the seeds of the global church. The gospel is spreading across the world, saving sinners, renewing nations, and changing everything. But today, many in the modern church are weak, torn, comfortable. The book of Hebrews says we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, watching us from heaven, spurring us on. The stories of these faithful Christ followers who've gone before us are what we need to wake up and return to our first love for Christ's mission. Let's learn from them.
Welcome back to Cloud of Witnesses for part two of Larry and Nancy Allen's missionary story. In the first episode, we journeyed with them through their years of ministry in Bangladesh, hearing about their heart for discipleship, the challenges of cross-cultural life, and their deep commitment to serving others with the love of Christ. In this episode, we'll hear about the circumstances that led them to temporarily serve in the Philippines and about how God ultimately brought them to continue their ministry in Bangladesh again. To begin, Larry shares what was taking place during that last term before their transition to the Philippines.
End of that term, 94, mm-hmm. was a critical time because we now had pastors and our principles and practices, we will not support pastors. And these had been church planters and that they were now over their churches. The churches were small, so it was going to be very difficult. So we had what we called the kind of cutoff thing. 1 year we would give them one more year of help, and we're going to totally cut them off. All these, there were about three or four or more guys that were going to be under their churches. It's going to be very difficult. They all have stories to tell. Ajoy, Chapon, all of these guys and many others have stories to tell about this point in time. We decided that we would like to go to a new field outside of Chittagong and perhaps even in the capital city where we had no churches under AOB. And so we were thinking, let's do something else for a time, leave the field, and let the field council decide what they're going to do. Are they going to allow the Allens to go someplace else, or what are they going to do? So the Webbers were in this. They decided to stay in Chittagong. We decided to go. Totmans went to Malamgat. They were at Malamgat. So we decided, while we were home in furlough, there was a call in need in the Philippines for 2 years for house parents at Manila, and that was Faith Academy. And so we volunteered as a two-year thing, and we thought, well, we'll go back to Bangladesh after that, and hopefully everything will allow us to go to a new field and start another church. Well, the two-year is a requirement with Faith Academy. In other words, they didn't want one-year house parents because changing every year for students and kids, it's very difficult. So we agreed to be house parents of girls. We had 20 girls. That's including our three teenagers and 17 other teenage girls for 1 year. And when the second year, the old house parents came back and said, we'd like to do this. Who's willing to volunteer to step down from being house parents? We volunteered to step down. But we knew that it was not time to go back to Bangladesh yet. So the field, the ABWE field, the oldest field in ABWE Philippines invited us to stay and do something new. And the new initiative there was getting missions started, and also getting city churches started. So it was, they're moving out from the urban areas from the suburban areas into the urban areas. So in this initiative already had been started with some of them, starting nice churches in Manila. And we agreed to stay and work in this. And coincidentally, when we were in one of the oldest churches there in it's called Manila BAP, in a mission conference, and they have a month-long mission conference with every Sunday another mission speaker and effort going on. We were the last speaker of the month. And the pastor, the Filipino pastor, says, we want you to give an invitation at the end of this. So there's been all this whole month. So give an invitation. So I did that. About a dozen people squeezed into his little office and wanted to become missionaries. Now, they were from all walks of life and professionals in there. And the pastor said, we have a question for you. What can we do with these professionals who don't want to go back to, say, the Bible school? They want to go on into missions. How can we train them? And I said, I have the answer. Because I had gone to Trinity, studied a degree, and my thesis had been how to train missionaries on the field. And that never caught on in Bangladesh, but it caught on right there, mm-hmm. right there at that moment. That began an 8-year turnover from teaching them how to start a core curriculum in missions in their home church and get those professionals who were doctors, nurses, teachers, and so forth out into the mission field sooner and get them going. So it took a while to get this turned over from our ideas in our head to actual courses in the churches and training them. And so that became our major ministry there in the Philippines.
The Allens served 2 terms in the Philippines before ultimately returning to Bangladesh. Upon their return, they encountered significant trials that made it clear their previous model of church planting was no longer the path forward. In response, the Lord opened a new door, leading them to develop and implement modular training for local pastors.
Nancy is the born teacher with a teaching degree from Cedarville. I'm not, and I haven't mentioned this because I mentioned church planting, and I felt this was the major role that God wanted us in on whatever field he is sending us to. But coincidentally, I had to become a teacher too. In Bangla, and then in the Philippines it was in English, thankfully. But all those years in Bangladesh, the 15 years preceding Philippines, 8 years in the Philippines, 2 terms, all this time teaching in either a Bible Institute, Bible College, seminary, with John Shorkar Seminary, which is BTS, Bangladesh Theological Seminary, in Bangladesh. When we went back there in 2007, and the Lord had not opened a door for us to work outside of Chittagong. We still were in Chittagong. We accepted that. The mission was no longer a mission. It was called an NGO, non-government organization.
2003.
And we had to, and that's right, 2003 mm-hmm. was when we went back. And so we were churning the wheels. How can we do church planting? It's all changed. So again, we picked another guy. We worked with him. We worked with his local church. The local church was supporting him. The Association of Baptists was supporting him. Our mission was supporting him 1/3. And we were working in a new area, actually the area that we used to live in, Border Hut. So there were some Christians there. There was a nice little nucleus to start with this guy. And then something happened, and we went home on furlough in 2007. And by the way, we bought a car unseen. We asked the guy who's a dealer up in Chicago for Christian ministers and stuff. He gets these deals. And so we asked him for a Toyota or something like that and gave him a certain amount of money. And he came up with a Ford Taurus. Okay, it was 1 year old, 2000. 6, Fort Torres, and we thought, okay, well, it's the right amount, and we'll do it. And so that 6-cylinder Ford Taurus got us around for about 11 years. And it was a very nice buy.
Very nice.
But anyway, we called that our peace car because we never had a problem with it. We could go anywhere and fill it up and go on many, many trips in that peace car. Mm-hmm. Well, in the time we were in Philippines with the kids graduating, as she said, going home, some getting married. So we were back and forth quite frequently, but we're still keeping the same regimen, 40% time on the field, 20% at home. It's just that the time segments are squeezed into 1 year or 2 years or something. Well, when we went back to, and that furlough of 2007 became a critical point. The guy that we left behind with support, fully supported, was dropped. There was a problem, and we became the center of the problem because we had left him in that situation with funds to carry on a ministry in a certain way, in a new way, actually. So I won't go into all those details, but it became a point of conflict and a real hard time for me because it negated the church that we started. That was no longer, and there was no church there. The guy was no longer a church planter, and he had good pastoral potential, humble guy. His wife was working, and his children had non-hearing children. He had it hard, but anyway, he went to work as a teacher and still a teacher today. But that work all faded out, and we essentially had a bad name. And so we knew going back in 2007 that now... Yeah, now 2000, verging into 2008, we had to find a new way. We weren't going to be able to be church planters anymore. So we noticed when we got there that they needed further training that they were not getting in our Bible Institute, which was becoming a Bible college, but we weren't getting the courses quick enough. So I came up with this sort of modular program, and we would have 5 courses that we made up that already the pastors needed for more training. And we called it PTS, Pastors Training Seminary. We called it seminary because it came from the Philippines. They call everything seminary over there. So we had got this idea. And finally, it sort of became a time for weekends rather than a full week for training pastors on a weekend with maybe 2 or 3 courses, subjects that they needed to help build up the church and help build them up for further study and keep them studying. In other words, not just courses, but how to study, how to continue on their own. And others got involved, not just me, other guys, and even from long distance. One pastor from a church in California comes and, excuse me, still does this regularly.
And when we came back to Bangladesh, as he said, there was a big change in the government that we were no longer, and we were not called missionaries anymore. We were just to say NGO, which a lot of people, if we say NGO, then, oh, you were missionaries. I mean, they kind of know. But
I understand.
Yeah. And so while we were in the Philippines, the William Carey Academy School was started by Mary Lou Long. And so I, being a one who loves to work with kids, and these were mostly Muslim kids that were attending the school, I got involved right away, mostly second and third grades, and I just loved it. Sometimes, I mean, I just to say how God works, and it's just amazing. You know, I have my Bengali clothes on because of where we lived. I would just cover my head. And I remember there sometimes some of the workers would say, Assalamu alaikum. You know, I'm like a Bengali girl, right? Woman. And like, I'm, oh, yeah, walaikum assalam. Anyways, at school, before I went to school, I'd almost always pray, Lord, please give me an opening because I can't just stand up there and say, now this is how everyone should believe, right? And this is, you know, talk about Jesus. But because we were using the curriculum we were using, the Christian from Bob Jones, there would be stories and things in there that the kids would come up with a question about, what does it mean to be saved? I'm like, okay, Lord, thank you. Then I can tell all 30 children, not just that one. Mm-hmm. So that would often happen, and I shouldn't have been surprised, because he does answer, and that was a beautiful way to work with those kids, and I so much enjoyed it.
This new season of ministry brought a move to a different region of Bangladesh, where the Allens began journeying to remote areas to teach and equip local pastors. Their focus shifted from planting churches themselves to strengthening the church by investing in those called to lead it. Listen in as Larry and Nancy share their experiences reaching these pastors and the path that ultimately led to their decision to retire from the field. But as we've seen throughout Cloud of Witnesses, retiring from the field rarely means retiring from service.
This propelled us into a new ministry in a new area, which was in my thinking, this is what we wanted to do long ago, was sort of get out of Chittagong. There are enough churches there now, and start churches in other areas. But because we were an NGO, we more or less could help in training and getting things going. So this propelled us into an area called Khulna, which was closer to the border of India, and in Shapon Mondol's area where he was working under GAP. We started the same kind of program that we started in Chittagong, and that actually started 2003. I have to back up and correct myself. 2003, we started that PTS program, and that was going on. So we wanted to start the same kind of program in a different way, sort of a different curriculum, a set curriculum that started in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and through every book. And I, after Genesis, I put a book in on Revelation. And then we did some surveys, yes. But anyway, book by book, going through the history of Israel up to... And so in the number of years that we had to do that, from 2008, 9, 10, 11, because we left Bangladesh in 2011, we worked in Shapon's area, which it would take us a whole day just to get there. And we would be dead tired. We would sleep on rocks. Didn't matter that they had a rock for a pillow or whatever. We could sleep on it that night. After that night is a little difficult, but anyway...
Every conveyance we used. We rode rickshaw, we rode a bus, we rode what they call rickshaw van, and that's the guy's still bicycling, but it's a flat board, so you could put a lot of different bags and luggage. What else?
Now you see this couch here that's about this way, a two-seater couch. The buses you get on would be about less than half of one side of this for two of us. And where to put our bags? Well, they had to go on top of the bus. Or they had to go under our feet, or if we could buy more seats, which they didn't like, then we
I forgot
we
to say
that.
Boat.
Yeah, on a boat.
A boat across the really huge river.
Boat. Getting on the boat. She loved getting on the boat. That was walking out on this ramp.
It was a,
and somebody
you had to walk this rail.
Holding your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we did that in stormy time, in low tide, high tide. Oh, all kinds of weather, all kinds of seasons, because we went there almost once a quarter during those times. And we made it up to the Messianic Psalms. And I think we also did Proverbs later on. That's about as far as, so we never got into the prophetic books in those 3 years. We went back to Bangladesh after leaving Bangladesh and retiring from the field in 2011. We went back three times to teach. Each time I had written my own courses, either for PTS or for the BBCB in Chittagong, which is the Bible College. So, and they wanted new courses. They needed new courses. They're still trying to add courses that have to be translated. And so this was all good. This was really winding up our ministry. And when we retired, we're wondering, what can we do? We had a year of furlough. We lived in Indiana. On on Brownsburg's on the west side of Indiana on 74, and a big church over there gave us a home for a year. And we went around the churches telling there's three things we think the Lord might want us to do. Start a church in America, somewhere in the U.S., maybe Canada, or help our kids out on their various fields. And we had kids in Canada. We had kids in West Coast, in Washington. We had one kid that was, they were going to Nicaragua, so they had to go to language study first. That meant Costa Rica. We had one family going to Papua New Guinea. And so we wanted to encourage our kids. And the other option was taking trips back to Bangladesh and teaching over there periodically.
So at the end of that furlough, after we already retired, visited all of our churches, we're coming to the end of 2012. And Irena and Dan are ready to take off for their mission field to Costa Rica, and their children are all very small. And I'm thinking, oh, I know we left our parents and they never complained, but this is a hard one. Now our kids are leaving us to go to the mission field. And then Irena surprises us, our youngest daughter, and she says, Mom, would you like to go to Costa Rica with us, you and Dad, and teach our three oldest girls, first, second, and third grade? I'm like, oh. She said, don't you want to go? I go, I do. And that was so, such a huge, huge, huge blessing. We all of us still talk about that as like an amazing year that it was less than a year, but we found our own little apartment, and girls came from their house to ours, and we had school. And then their school, it's a well-known school that a lot of people are going to work in Spanish-speaking countries attend that school. It was very good.
Almost all the Spanish-speaking Central America, South America use this school in Costa Rica, San Jose.
Okay.
Now, you see, she's quite natural with teaching the kids. For me, this is all fish out of water sort of stuff.
He taught science and what else? Something.
Doing history. Doing the house parent thing, that's a fish out of water. I was totally out of my realm.
We had our challenges.
And so these are also teaching experiences.
But the girls really loved it, what you taught them.
Really.
They remember
about
the rocks.
And science rocks. And so forth.
After spending time in Costa Rica teaching their grandchildren and then returning to the United States, the Allens found themselves at a crossroads, wondering what God had in store next. Though no longer on the field, their hearts remained deeply burdened for the Bengali people. In his perfect timing, the Lord opened unexpected doors to serve a Bengali community right in the United States, allowing their ministry to continue in a new and meaningful way.
We came back home in 2013 and we're wondering where to locate ourselves in the U.S. We're retired from the field, but we're not retired. So we're at the ABW office trying to figure out some things with Doug, and the USA leader. And not quite sure what to do. We're pretty sure the Lord wants us to start a church someplace in the U.S. or Canada. So we're talking to Doug, and he's over all the USA things. And he's kind of hesitant about taking retired missionaries or older missionaries that don't last too long. So our first thing was we were going to be committed to this for more than a term to see a church start. And we'd seen a church start every 4 years, so one term. However, when we didn't know where to go, so we started surveying up in Michigan, Detroit. There's a town up there called Hamtramck, and about 15,000 or something, I forget the number exactly, of Bengalis, but quite a number up there. And we surveyed that, and there was another mission working with them. We decided not to encroach on them. Outside of Toronto and in Toronto, a large Bengali community, and we went up there to see that, and there were some missions going on up there. So we decided not to go in on that. our daughter was living here, Perkasie, just a few miles down the road. And she said, oh, there's a lot of Bengalis around here. Why don't you come and see? And so I asked George Weber and our son-in-law who lives here, Peter, to help me do a survey. And we went around, surveyed in this area to try and find out how many Bengalis are here and if anybody's working with them. So we were inquiring of churches and so forth. We went to quite a few different churches. No one was working with them. And by the way, no one seemed to be interested in working with them. So, but we found quite a few, and the Bengalis would range in number. Oh, they'd give us 1,000 families, they said, that live around here. And then we get these highfalutin numbers and exaggerated numbers. 10, and finally, we would say, maybe there's a 5,000 people around here, and that's probably worth the effort. We didn't want to go to New York City, where there's 100,000 Bengalis, but there's churches over there, and there's people, Christians, working with those. We wanted to work in an area where no one was working. So we decided to move here. Now, we began renting and then looking as we're renting for something more permanent because we couldn't stay in that home. It already belonged to a family that was coming back. By the way, they were over in Ukraine at that time and coming back. So we were on a timeline that wasn't working too well because we kept looking and looking. Everything's very expensive. Finally, across the street was a twin house for rent. These are two houses fit together called twin houses. And it was two bedroom. We really wanted three bedrooms for our kids. When they come, they would have two bedrooms. And it's big enough to have a bedroom in the basement, finished basement, I think, over there. But the rent was so high, because it's $1 per square foot. So it's 1,500 square foot, it's $1,500 per month. And we're thinking, oh, all that expense. We've never seen such expense in Bangladesh, like where even with electricity and AC, it was about $500 a month at the most. So right across on this side, as we looked at that and said, oh, that's a nice house, very nice, but so much for rent. And over here was a house for sale by the same realtor. And so our realtor brought us over and we looked at it and we said, oh, this is pretty nice, you know, and what can we do for a mortgage? Mortgage, what can we do? And, you know, at our age, buying a house, we found it was cheaper to have a mortgage, and they couldn't turn us down because of age than buying a house. So we bought the house 2014, moved in, and then we found out we have six neighbors, six families within walking distance as we go around the block that lived here. Today, almost 10 years later, there are 12 Bengali families and more moving in. And we found out more just if we extend our walk, say about a half a mile, then there's more Bengalis down the street here, down the street there. And in the whole area now, we've discovered actually about 10,000 people in these two cities. We're the only ones working with them in their language. There are others who want to work with them that don't know the language, so that it's much harder for them.
And another thing that helped to lead us to this area, the church that we're attending, a Bible Fellowship Church, they had a huge ESL program going. So every Wednesday night, there were so many Bengalis coming, others from other lands too, but in particular, so many Bengalis. So the Bengalis would come for English classes. At that time, I was teaching the children, their children upstairs. They were learning the books of the Bible. They were learning Bible verses. And then down in the basement, the little children were being babysat. It was a really hopping time then. Now, since 2020, that has fallen off, but we have started ESL in our home. So every Wednesday morning, Larry teaches men here in the living room, and I teach the ladies in the dining room. And if we had more teachers, and we have a class at church on Thursday nights. We have not advertised since 2020. We just started, and we have a good number, but we could have 100 if we had more teachers. I don't know what we're going to do this fall. We just really need to keep praying about it. But that's one thing we're doing here, besides all the visiting and them visiting us. And we get invited to all of their big festivals. We get invited to their children's weddings. So when we first moved here, it was all about visiting. So we sometimes will meet them in the parking lot. Mm. And I remember this one day, we started talking to a Bengali. We're talking in Bangla for a while. He says, "Wait, do you know Bangla?"
Right. Happens so often.
They're, it's just so like just flowing, and they're talking Bangla with us. But wait, how do you know Bangla? How do you know our language?
Mm-hmm. Now, with the ESL program, we went out giving brochures before 2020 to bring people in. Mm. And over at this one housing unit, they have 1,000 apartments over in this one housing unit in this town. And one guy was sitting with his phone out on a park bench. So I just went over to see if he's Bengali or not. And he's studying English on his phone. And he's an older gentleman. We began talking. His English is pretty good, but he wanted to improve it. So we started a relationship. He came to ESL. We started a relationship years ago, and now he's moved away. He went to Bangladesh for a few years. He's back in Kansas with his son, who was transferred from here to over there. And we still have a relationship. The other day, he put something in Bangla on
Facebook
saying, "Who am I? Why am I here?" And all of this.
And what happens next?
And what happens
next? What do I do? And I said, "We know. We have the answer." Now, he hasn't written back to that,
but we can talk
to him personally, too.
He will, and we will. Because we share verses with him. Mm-hmm. We share the word. We share it with many people that, at first, you know, wouldn't listen. After we start building relationships and helping them a lot, here and there and everything, we just do everything. We had no... All the years in Bangladesh and the Philippines trained us for this time here, and we're getting older and older. And there's one young guy who's a Muslim background believer, who's much younger, knows English, has a master's degree in theology from our seminary there in Chittagong. He's living here, trying to get his family to come over, trying to get the visa to be a missionary here. And we're praying that he will plug in and actually start the church that so far we haven't seen started. So you can pray for that. And that's our story.
Larry and Nancy Allen's story is a powerful testimony of lifelong faithfulness, flexibility, and a deep love for the people they served. Across this two-part episode, we've followed their journey from the early days of ministry in Bangladesh through unexpected transitions to the Philippines and back again, where trials reshaped their calling and led to the development of a pastor training ministry that today continues to bear fruit. Even after retiring from the foreign field, their passion for reaching the Bengali people didn't fade. Instead, God opened new opportunities to serve right here in the U.S. The Allen story reminds us that missions isn't confined by geography. It's a lifelong calling to follow wherever God leads and to serve faithfully in every season. You also heard in today's episode about the ministries of ABWE in Bangladesh. Bangladesh is a nation still in need of workers to spread the love of Christ through ministries of compassion and partnering with nationals to train them for leadership in their own contexts. Learn more about what we're doing at abwe.org/serve/countries/Bangladesh. Again, we are in a season of urgent personnel need. Pray that the Lord would raise up workers and head on over to our website, abwe.org, and head on over to our Bangladesh page to see how you can be used in this needy nation. Cloud of Witnesses is a production of ABWE. I'm your host, Alex Kochman. Our production director is Grant Boring. Our researcher and interviewer is Jay York. Production support is provided by Brian Van Timmeren. Additional voiceovers by Jason Younger. Get equipped to make disciples and learn about how you can reach the nations at abwe.org.
Cloud of Witnesses is a production of ABWE. ABWE is a global family of ministries reaching more than 80 countries by sharing Christ, planting churches, and training Christian leaders. After nearly 100 years, ABWE is continuing to take the gospel to the ends of the earth. You can help us advance the kingdom for the next 100 years and beyond by supporting the mission through the Global Gospel Fund. Learn more at abwe.org/cloud.